Denk an den 31. Juli.
Wieso?
Last Call für deine Steuer.
Oh no, ich weiß gar nicht, wo ich anfangen soll.
Weil wieso Steuer? Das ist wie Steuererklärung, nur ohne Stress.
Ist das einfach?
Klar, macht fast alles automatisch.
Dauert das lange?
Nö, einfach per App.
Na dann.
Hol dir jetzt dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer. Bis zum 31. Juli abgeben.
Mysterious Universe, Season 35, Episode number 20 already, Joe. Can you believe it?
Nope.
Now dig. This realm boasts an oxymoronically massive amount of tiny happenings. Many, many mysteries can be found to surround you in every wee way within every micro moment of every diminutive day. Strangeness is found surfing at all scales, proving that even the mightiest of mysteries can come in the littlest of boxes. Giggity. I am your haiku-ish host, Brandon Thomas, and with me as always is the man who coined the term, pardon my French, sex Joe Rive Hodgden.
I don't think I did, but I'll take credit for it if you want.
I'm going to throw you some stuff. You gotta lean into it.
So. Okay.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, yeah, totally.
The question mark. Have you ever seen the movie called Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
No. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
I know. That's why I had to be very clear on it. Robert Downey Jr., the guy who shouldn't have played Batman, the one with the nipples on the suit, Val Kilmer. Mm. But it's a great movie. It's like a detective story or whatever. He's at this Hollywood story. This chick walks up to him. He's not interested in talking to. Ditzy, we could say. Simple. And she says, so what do you do? Right? Like this vapid question. And he just looks at her straight face and said, oh, I invented dice. And she just, it's like, you don't have to, and she fucked off, right? It's great.
She's like, wow, how interesting. I will not talk to you anymore.
Yeah. And we heard it on Seinfeld the other night. It was funny. Mary said to slip it in. So it might become a formula. I might claim that you have done all sorts of things.
I've been flying helicopters for 87 years.
There you go. You invented the question mark, you know, Shit like that. Anyway, how are you, bud?
Good. How was your week so far?
Man, it's been smashing, honestly. Huge revelations, amazing weather for the MU Weather Report. We're going through a fun topic today. And that's been the thing. The research for this has been a blast. It's just been a big game. It's been fun, and I can't wait to present it. So this one, I'm actually very excited. You and I have been laughing our asses off here before we even got started. So who's to say if the Gigglebug hits us both and we're able to read it all? But I'm pumped about this.
Is it more of the pulling from all these different sources? Or?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I got three books sitting here that I'm going to show you. One of the guys, two that the guy sent, and actually this is a double that I had, so I'm going to keep the flagged up one and send you the other one, but this is Jenny Randall's. We've got The Hidden Folk, All Poltergeists and Fairies. Are they just the same thing? It's great. S.D. Tucker, and then Symmetry by Preston Dennett. I talked to Preston Dennett the other day, by the way. He said hi.
Oh,
and
nice.
I wanted to get a fresh up on Dolly's Encounter because this book, which we are going to do a mini saga on, this is going to be another From the Mundane because it's nuts, dude. It's nuts. So we're going to talk about this. It's all about Preston Dennett's partner, Dolly Saffron, and it's Symmetry, a True UFO Adventure, and we're going to go over one story in it today. This is, though, something we're planting a seed for later on down the line, but like I said, I talked to Dolly and Preston. Shout out, guys. They're doing great, and we adore them, and they did say hi.
So, awesome. Yeah, and coming up, taking kind of a turn in Plus, but we're going to be continuing. If you're on Plus, you will know that we started the Mysteries book by Colin Wilson on last Tuesday's show,
Yeah. And
we're going to be continuing some of that. And for the free listeners, again, huge book, and it's subdivided into all these different sections, and so there's no shortage of weird ways I can go, and I am monumentally unprepared to tell you which section I actually picked, because I was going to go with The Path of the Dragon, because you requested that.
Okay.
But as I was looking through it, it's kind of stuff we've been covering lately anyway, and more to do with, you know, like magic, occult stuff, which is par for the course for Colin Wilson, but there's the one that actually caught my attention was The Curious, see, I have it marked here, let me look. It's called The Curious History of Human Stupidity. And
oh, yes.
That one actually, it, it kind of leans more towards the way I think man's tendency to believe what he wants to believe and the appetite for recognition and self-esteem and just kind of he goes through a bunch of different people and just, you know, the need for security and the hankering after insecurity and just it leans into ufology, all kinds of stuff. So I think I'm going to go into that section and but we'll see where it takes me.
Incredible and well chosen, sir. And this is the thing. I appreciate the breeze over and then touch in with The Way of the Dragon, because we were very just curious by the salacious title. And thank
it
you
was
for
salacious,
doing that.
Yeah. It had to do with, from what I could, the brief, you know, rundown, the Path of the Dragon section has to do with Gerald Gardner, which, if you don't know, is the founder of like modern Wicca back in the mid 1900s or so. But it didn't pop out to me as much as, you know, that other section. And I love talking about stupid people. So,
yeah,
I think that's where we're going to go.
Well, it sounds like an amazing study. And it also sounds like it perhaps when it ties into, I say stupid is again, the salacious title. So we'll go with it. But that type of mindset is looking for something to believe in hardcore, right, outside of themselves. And so this is what Diana Pasulka brought it up before, but she mentions in American Cosmic, the ideal of aliens being the new religion. And this is sort of, you know, the Vatican's placed themselves behind this sort of ideal to be poised ambassadors for the new coming and all of this. So it is an interesting concept when you think about the psychology of will believe anything in a realm that's designed to trap and deceive those people who believe anything.
Yeah, and another part of the summary that really popped out was neither science nor religion have a monopoly of truth. So I'm like, ooh, oh, I think I'm going to have to get into that one.
Sex, yes, let's definitely do that. That's for damn sure, man. Well, I appreciate you. Now, we are here to show that even a micro squirrel is capable of a little nut procurement from time to time. We are talking about making a big deal out of the small stuff. We are satisfying the appetite for the petite and giving that beautiful button on a fur coat its chance at a day in the sun. First, what we have is just a wee little tip, a little did you know. Now, this is what's referred to as a mouche bouche. Did you know this? Do you know what a mouche bouche is? You like cooking?
I don't know what that is.
It's
no.
A French term, and this is a little tiny little bite-sized morsel to get the meal going, or a tiny little sample hors d'oeuvre.
A hors d'oeuvre.
Hors d'oeuvre, that's right. So we're going to be doing a bouge bouge of something here to get us started. And this is simply proof that you may not be tapping into your full potential when it comes to exercising your free will. Okay. So on April 1st, 1989, Richard Branson, you know who this is? The Virgin Mobile guy?
Yes, sounds familiar.
Eccentric billionaire, we could say. Blonde hair, big teeth.
Oh, okay.
Probably
yeah.
Capricorn. Executed an elaborate April Fool's prank by flying a hot air balloon shaped like a UFO over London. Have you ever heard about this?
I have not.
Oh, well, this is fun. Now, it landed in a foggy field, prompting a massive response from police and the army, the freaking army. When the hatch opened, just designed to come down very cool like a UFO, a hired little person, or a midget, dressed up as an ET, emerged. What a fucking legend, man. See, again, you guys take a look at your free will and how you're using it. This is great. All is a prank.
He hired a midget?
He hired a midget hop in a homemade hot air balloon that was crafted to look like a saucer, the classic saucer shape. They even had a strobe inside of it, dude, going around. Now, the zoom in on this thing looks silly as shit. It's goofy when you pull it up, and it's great. So there, and then he talks about it later, like, oh yeah, the army and them, they arrested him for wasting their time. So yeah, but he's like, oh, I'm a billionaire, so fuck it. I don't know if that's how he speaks.
I'll pay the fines, whatever.
Absolutely. And then you have, he did another April Fool's Day, though, this jokester, where he told a small town that they were about to get an influx of one of his businesses that would bring a ton of money into their town, and they started rearranging infrastructure and doing all the shit. Came April Fool's, he said, April Fool's, bitches, I wasn't ever going to do that.
Oh, that's messed up.
Yeah, fuck this guy, pretty much. But now, on to the shorts, and you may find a theme here with what we're talking about. So there is this book, again, that the guy sent me called The Hidden Folk, or Poltergeists and Fairies, just the same thing. I went ahead and found it on Amazon and linked it, and here is a little ditty from that beauty. Now, in 1561, Swiss theologian and preacher Pierre Viret wrote of what he termed mountain dwarves habitually bothering human miners by throwing gravel and stones at them underground. although characteristically, these missiles would never genuinely hurt anybody. Now, despite them sounding just like subterranean poltergeists here, Verrett describes the dwarves' alleged visible form as being that of a little and elderly person of a height of a mere 3 palm spans. So take your hand, put it together 3 times. That's how tall them bitches were.
Yeah, a little gnome.
I know. And they were dressed up like little human miners with smocks and leather aprons. How cute is that?
Adorable.
Do you think they have little animals that they get the leather from, or do you think they take a big piece of leather and just cut it down into tiny little bits?
They probably have little gnome-sized cows that they're getting around with, yeah.
That's what I'm thinking, little gnome cows in there. Now, legends in which fairies occur act very much like modern pebble-throwing spooks as well.
So they're probably meant to, maybe they're scared as shit and they're trying to genuinely hurt these people, but they're so tiny that it's like, you know, an ant throwing something at you. It just kind of pings off of you and you're like, oh, look at this cute little adorable guy.
And we're going to get into that, Cycle Sinker. I love your face. Next, the 1973 UFO chronology, a worldwide wave. This is going to be linked, guys. This is a UFO sightings malaysia.blogspot.com. Now, in August 10th, 1973, Ibeg, Colombia, 4 grade school students and a policeman saw 4 small humanoids beneath a bridge. The beings were only 20 centimeters. You know how tall that is?
About, what, 7 inches?
Son of a bitch. You're homeschooled. Yeah, 7.8 inches. Very nice. Tall and disappeared. I had to look it up. I was like, I'm not even close. And disappeared when the witness approached. So tiny little 7-inch tall little creatures, they disappeared when they came up. They were just under a bridge there. Now, traces were left in the mud and later photographed.
What, little mini footprints?
Mm-hmm.
Aw.
Little traces.
They just get cuter and cuter.
I know. Next, we have the mini movement of the 1970s and beyond, where we're going to put one of these reports under the microscope just to find the damn thing, am I right? Although a summary of various reports in the area can be found in a linked article, and it's going to be titled Malaysia's Miniature Alien Mystery, Unveiling the Enigmatic Encounters of Tiny Visitors. And that was just a tiny, brief, small, petite, wee, itty-bitty, teensy-weensy little mention of it here. Other than that, you can find out more about it and the links, but let's break out our trusty magnification tools and take a deeper look at one of those cases. Now, an article from the Stowell Primary School UFO incident in Birkitt, Metajam, 1970. This is from a UFO sighting in Malaysia, and this is a Malaysia blog spot. All linked, guys. So check this thing out. The way he writes is great. It's one of the old school HTML blogspot type.
Oh, yeah.
Things that just for Malaysia. It's just freaky woo-woo of Malaysia. It's great.
I can picture that website in my head without even looking at it. Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's linked, guys. Enjoy. Now, in August of 1970, this article claims, the Straits Times published a drawing of an alien in a spacesuit as front page headline news in the Singapore National Newspaper. Picture of the original news article listed in the link breakdown. So you guys can check out not only the original posts of that, but the article as well. Now, the Straits Times August 21st of 1970 article reads, the heading is Crowds Rush to Flying Saucer School. And the text from page 1 from Ping Yang Thursday, the quote, little men are here again. And if you believe 6 Birkitt Metajam schoolboys, they're tiny little guys running around out there, man, that landed. Check this out. So the boys, all students of Stowell English Primary School, claimed that a soup plate size saucer landed near them as they were playing cops and robbers in the brush beside the school one of these days. Now, I was wondering here, I guess cops and robbers are an international thing.
Yeah.
Like for kids to
play
that?
Well, it used to be at least.
Okay.
It's probably not PC anymore, but.
I don't know why that my ignorance found that interesting to discover. It just might be perhaps an indicator I just still have a little work to my of my own to do. You know?
It's okay. We can't know everything.
Well, I don't know why I assume that they wouldn't like have that much, I don't know, leisure time or that give a shit about the power struggle between cops and rubbers. But of course
the
they would.
The real question is, did they ever play Cowboys and Indians?
That is the question. Yeah. Indigenous and colonizer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, one boy claimed that he was even shot by one of the five horrible-looking things that were three-inch space Lilliputians. Lilliputians. Hang on. Lilliputians. That's it.
I don't think I've ever heard that word in my life.
So he used a little minuscule little space gun, and he shot him. And it sounds like, honestly, that this little judgy brat got what he deserved. He said the thing was horrible looking. He said it was 3 inches and gross. Now, I did look this up because I hadn't heard of it either. But Lilliputians are tiny 6-inch tall humanoids from Jonathan Swift's 1726 novel Gulliver's Travels. Inhabiting the island of Lilliput, they are characterized by their extreme smallness, petty arrogance, and complex political squabbles. Which is funny to think about these things having a heated argument over the public relations budget for next year and the overspending in giant binding ropes department of material acquisitions.
Well, it reminds me of the from the mundane to the magnificent story, kind of, where it's just different levels. So if the it looks like a tiny, you know, what did they say, a plate-sized UFO, but to the next macro level down, you know, the ant size, that looks like a huge several football fields mothership.
I love you. And again, cycle, saint. I'm not sure how much I should tell you about how right you are about what we're going to talk about. Well done.
Ooh, wow.
Incredibly well done. Now, the first report, whether it was a hallucination or overwrought imagination by the boys, the tale has gripped the whole Birket-Meterjam district in central province Westli, Malaysia there, with the flying saucer fever. And hundreds of people were converging on the school, which was forced to shut its gates. Just to get a glimpse of this thing. Because the boys, it was few encounters. Check this out. So this is the first report of the Malaysian landing of a flying saucer since a similar story of little men could be found near Joshua Bershire School last year from when this was written in the 70s. So again, it's 70s. Keep that in mind. There were six boys who reported an unearthly brush with the tiny spacemen. They were, I'm not going to say the names, but they ranged from 8 to 11, okay? Kids said that they went back to the scene at about 6:30 and they found in the morning. And they found the saucer still there, and it was surrounded by the little spacemen. One of the kids told him. And he said that they were only about 3 inches tall, but they looked horrible. Another boy, Mohammed Ali, no relation, told the headmaster that one of the spacemen took out what looked like a little gun, and he shot it at him. And he said it struck my hand, but it didn't hurt very much.
Felt like a little zing.
He said all I felt was a little pain. And Mr. Uri promptly proceeded to the scene with another teacher but found no trace of a spaceship or aliens at all. And he said, quote, to our amazement, the five little men put out a gangway and alighted from the saucer, he said. Now, one of them obviously was the leader and he dressed in a yellow suit and the other four wore blue uniforms. That's how you know one's the leader, right? Now, when he saw them installing an aerial on a tree branch and sent out signals, we got scared and ran away.
Setting up a little remote comms unit?
Yes, on these tiny little dudes. Yes, three of them in blue uniforms, one in yellow, calling the shots. They're setting up a little aerial next to this tiny little saucer-shaped UFO, all to scale.
Adorable.
Adorable. Now, alighted, do you know what the word alighted means?
Got out of?
Past tense particle for verb alight has two main definitions: to descend or step down from a vehicle or to form of transport or to come to rest or perch or to settle on a surface.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't, so I looked it up.
Yes, land.
Homeschool. Yeah. Now, early this morning, some of the boys went back and saw the flying saucer still there. It had been moved a few yards, but the spacemen were guarding it, they said. And at 11 a.m. today, one of the kids returned to the spot during the school's recess, but the flying saucer had disappeared. And however, he saw the aerial still hanging in the tree branch that they set up.
What is an aerial?
I think
like
it's like
an
a little
antenna?
Yeah, like a little antenna, like a little satellite dish. So it was because he said it was sent to send out signals is
right.
What it was for. And it's almost like they set things up and things will occur as we go through a couple of these where there's an automatic inference or knowledge of what the item is used for. That's fascinating.
Weird.
And yeah, we'll come to that because the folks having these encounters, you'll notice this theme of just how they report things, that they'll say something about what the object is, but how would they assume that that's what it was used for?
Just instant knowing.
It's an instant knowing. It's very matter of fact. So again, they saw this aerial hanging there that they just knew for some reason were sending out signals. Mr. Urit said that he had questioned the boys and he had felt the whole thing was a figment of their imagination, which we can't rule out, okay? Now, another one here, August 22nd of 1970, the subheading 39 spaceships, 31 spacemen. So where are the other eight little men? This is the title of the article. And I linked this guy so you guys can check all this out. So about the only thing they have in common is their height, all 3 inches of it. Oof. And the fact that most are armed. Now, this is ironic, that armed singular. Some wear yellow, some wear blue, some vanish in a flash, and at least two of them only have one arm and even sports a pair of horns. Now, are they invaders from outer space who seem to be bent on swamping this sleepy town by sheer force of numbers? The score at lunch today was 39 spaceships and 31 spacemen that these kids reported, which means that at least 8 spacemen are still wandering around somewhere if they just...
Or they're on the bottom of somebody's shoe.
And that's true, too. Yeah, they probably know that, man, a couple of you guys aren't coming back with us. A couple of them probably get picked up by birds.
Oh, yeah, for cats. Sure. Some owls or something. Did they go into more detail about what they look like? Because he said they were, like, horrific or horrible looking, but were they just ugly or were they, like...
Ugly. There was a kid that drew a picture of it, and it's in the article. So it's in. They posted it. They posted the picture that the kid drew in the article in the 70s. So that's all linked in the show description. So you, all of this is one article so far. So you click on that one thing, and it'll show you a couple of things. But it does. It looks like sort of that little gremlin. Oh fuck! I pulled the story, but I can't remember. Is little gremlins with a broad face, big eyes, huge bat, almost bat-like ears,
like Mogwais?
Kind of, a little bit, but like creep, like more menacing, I would say.
Hmm.
Like the little things that get set loose in Harry Potter, the little fairies that run around and they cause havoc catch them. They have that looking face to them, and they're like little just mischievous little shits.
Yeah.
But these kids say that these tiny little things were horrific looking, but they had one arm, and most of them had one arm only, and then they had a gun in that arm as well.
Huh.
So you would think they would have devised a way to either have a gun for an arm or a claw or something cool. Or
strap it to their head.
Yeah, right. Not utilize their only appendage for that type of thing, for manipulation by arming it, pun intended.
I wonder how they're steering the spaceship with, maybe they have a holster.
And this is the thing. They got a holster. Maybe it's all done with mind. Maybe they really just have to interact with physical reality in that way whenever they're off the ship. Who knows? But it is an interest, and some of them can just blink out of in a flash, so it might not be a big deal, you know, because they can just be here and then just pull some sort of, I don't know, ripcord and be in the other dimension and be.
Well, especially since it doesn't seem like their phasers do a whole lot, so.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of not a big deal. They're over here like testing weaponry and shit. This little tiny kid was like, nah, it wasn't a big deal. Like, not even a bee sting. So it was a 10-year-old Kay Wings Warren who spotted one. The one with the horns as he emerged from his spaceship is what the article said. And he must have been the leader because he was the one wearing the yellow uniform. Again, that's how you know. And his 4 companions with his own ship, they sported a mundane shade of blue. So it just looks like a little blue color. So the 5 were armed with miniature space blasters, and the one with horns loosed off at Wingsman when the youngster tried to capture him. So this little kid tries to go capture this little thing. And what do you think the result of all of this is?
Oh, he just poofed out of existence, I'm sure.
A little red dot on Wingsman's right leg. He is proud to show off to everybody. Because one of the spacemen, the one with the one arm pointing where he saw the spaceman showing his chums the battle scar, he went, showed his all of his buddies, told the story, showed him a little battle scar from being attacked by this thing that he tried to grab, that he accosted. And fought back, but that's okay. Now, unlike true outer space tradition, he fainted after the extraterrestrial attack and he woke up in a classroom. He had been discovered where he fell outside the school perimeter fence and he was carried there by prefects, so by his buddies. It was Wingsman who reported seeing 25 men stepping out of a similar number of spaceships at the spot on Wednesday. So it's like one per spaceship. There's 25 of them, tiny little things laying out there. But once more, fate was against him, because just as he rushed forward for a better look, the school bell rang, and he's a good kid, so he went back to class. Instead of going, fuck that, be tardy, man, what are you talking to? They probably a beat, though, huh, Malaysia? Now, however, he was managed to draw 2 pictures of the aliens, which again, guys, are in the links there, from memory. So this kid drew them from memory, is what we have to go on, but not all resort to violence when threatened with capture. Take the case of T. Vishringham, Malaysia again, guys. Another 10-year-old and his pal, Devaretti, who was 12, after classes, they went to a spot where there were reports of a tiny little spaceship landing. And sure enough, they saw two little miniature figures. One was perched on a branch, and the other was taking it easy on the rock on a rock on the ground. Now, when the boys tried to gain immortality as the first pair to capture the spaceman, the little men simply vanished. And the boys are prepared to swear in a temple that they're telling the truth, which is a big deal, I think. So the one who tried to capture him said that he was on a branch. He said he was about 3 inches high and the branch was about 3 feet away from the ground. He, too, was wearing a yellow suit. And he had only one arm, his left arm, which I'm glad that he said that. I was like, which arm is it? You know, and it's his left.
How many kids saw this exact thing?
It was heaps. It was a bunch, and they all sort of reported it in little batches. It would only reveal to kids. Adults didn't see it. People were going nuts over this thing.
It's such an odd and unique encounter. Like, I don't remember. Besides, it's reminiscent of, like, the, you know, the fairy folklore and thing, only with a spaceship, though. So it's like, but you don't really hear much of that anymore, at least from what I've seen.
A lot of these are in the 70s, man, and we're going to maybe speculate wildly on why. But what I was fascinated by this was he's a little one-armed dude, and he's in a tree. Think of the skills you've got to have to be a one-armed tree climber carrying a gun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he probably just shot up there in his spaceship.
That's true, too. See, this sort of, again, takes, like, the danger element out of it. If you can just queef out of existence, man, then you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, he's moving like plasma.
Exactly. So there were a few other people. So six other folks reported this as well. Six pupils of the school reported that they first saw tiny little men on this Wednesday evening from the 70 perspective here. Five aliens, they claim, landed from a blue flying saucer. The headmaster of the Stowell School in the same place said that he questioned them carefully and that they insisted all their stories were true. And Mr. Uri, who's about had it up to here with these fucking kids, I'll tell you that, said that he brought two of the pupils, Mohammed Sakiri and Abdul Rahim, to the scene again this morning, and they still maintained that they had not been imagining things. He said he didn't know what to think. He said that might be some leaves or insects that they have mistaken for little spacemen. Jerk off motion. Said when the news spread yesterday that thousands of curious onlookers flocked to the school, and they had to close it down. Very cool.
Wow.
This was, again, in the 70s. The original posting, and this is a posting from a posting, so I'm going to post all of it, guys. All the links are included in this if you want to know more. But because we're on a tiny tour here, we're moving on. Have you noticed that the stories are kind of quick and small?
Yeah,
and
we.
Now, what we are going to do, though, is I've kind of increased them as length as we go, actually. So this one's going to get a little bit more in-depth. But this is Dolly's Saffron's story from Symmetry, a true UFO adventure, which you could call a true UFO adventure. Right?
Oh, yes.
Come on. Now, the adventure is by Preston Dennett, and this is from page 96. If you've got a copy, gang, and you want to follow along, it starts at 3/4 of the way down left page there. Reading from the work. Around age 16, Dolly had an experience on board a craft that sent her mind reeling. Sometimes she was present when others were being taken on board and transported, examined, or counseled. Now, I kind of need to catch up here. Dolly Saffron has a crazy life with UFOs, and we're going to get into her story, but just real quick, she's on a UFO, she's taught to fly them, all kinds of shit, and she goes so frequently that she tells these stories as if they were just like a Sunday afternoon. No big deal. One of these times, she was on the craft, and this is what happened. When she was present when somebody was pulled on board in one of these instances. Now, she said it was like one of those instances where we're all picking up people and stuff like that. That's how Dolly talks. She's sweet. And as I asked to walk with this man to a certain point to the craft, because it was a big craft. So I did, and I stayed with him, talking to him. And he was kind of out of it already. He was just kind of like sitting there and staring and stuff. And I talked to him anyway. I always talk to everybody. I don't care what your mental status is. When you're on board, I will talk to you. He was just very calm and sitting there. And as they came for him, I followed him because I'm curious and I always want to see what's going on. And as they took him to a domed glass enclosure, it had a bench in it. He sat on the bench for a while. They took all his clothes from him and they brought him out and they changed the atmosphere inside the dome. He was sealed in and the atmosphere was changed. Now, at this point, I'm going to say that when I called Dolly the other day, she didn't mention this in the work. But she said that this dude walks in completely voluntarily, okay, led by two other entities. He is stripped of all of his clothes, just butt naked. He is then smeared with some sort of clear gel-like salve. It was like tallow, but clear.
Hmm.
So he's smeared in all this stuff. And then he's led to this huge med bed kind of looking thing with a clear dome top, but the top was retracted and open. The dude gets in the thing. That's when he stood in the bench. The bench went down to the floor that was inside this thing. It dropped down. He's standing there, and she was amazed to see what happened next. She said she's watching him, and to her shock, she watched him drop in size to about half. She said he just got smaller and smaller, and she realized that he was about half of his original size. She said, and as she's watching, she's thinking they're done. Nope, they weren't. They dropped him about to another half, to where he was a good quarter of the size that he was. And the man that had been almost 6 foot tall appeared now to be about 18 inches, 2 foot tall. He had been shrunken down by the ETs to 1/4 of his original size. They then led him away, and Dolly saw them put him on a gurney. But the way she described on the call the other day, she said that he hopped out. Like, I picture this tiny little dude hopping out. He's all wobbly, you know, because he just got shrank. So it's a little, I don't know what that does to your body. And she said he was like wringing his hands and stuff like this, and like kind of shaking and breathing heavy every now and then as he was shrinking down. Shit, it took like 30 minutes or an hour, which seems like it would take longer, but anyway, or shorter, but less time. He shrinks down. They get him out of the thing and they help him over like these tiny little hands. One takes one hand, one takes the other. It's not one picking him up. It's like they both help him as if he's a full grown man off of this thing. One takes his tiny little hand on one side, one takes tiny little hand on the other, hop him off, get him on a gurney. He's all wobbly. And then they wheel him out of another door in the other direction.
What is the purpose of that? And why did they have to grease him up first?
That, again, so many questions. So Dolly writes in the work here that Preston writes about Dolly's work. I didn't get to follow that. She said that she was told no, and she always wondered what the hell happened. She said, I mean, it took about an hour. She was just standing there with her jaw hitting the ground watching, and he seemed to be okay during the process. He was, again, breathing heavy at some points. He was opening and closing his fists at part of it, and his hands would extend, and then he would close his fist for a few minutes and relax. And at one point, it looked like he was a little unsteady. So he's in there just like, ugh. Because you can imagine the structure you're in shrink, getting larger as you're standing in it. So that would disorient you a bit, wouldn't it?
Looking the weird details.
The texture of the ground would change as you shrunk. So you would feel a little, what?
Yeah.
She said at one point it looked like, he was unsteady. He got himself back together and he was really tired afterwards. So this just takes it out of you, apparently. She said the man was out of view, and Dolly can reach out to the craft, which is called Telera. And we're going to talk more about that. But she telepathically interfaces with the craft and asks, what the hell was that? She said, What was he always that size? Did you make him bigger and put him back to normal size? Which, that's a great question. That's honestly not something I would have thought of. Talera's answer was short and concise. The craft answered her. And she said, there is a microverse and a macroverse. He said that there are places that are very small compared to where you are from. And nobody is your size. She was stunned by this. And she said that that's all the craft told her. And then it shocked her, and she was like, oh my God. She's like, how could they do that? She said, has no freaking clue. It's still imprinted on her brain, which it would be. This is the part that stood out in the book. Heaps of crazy shit in here, guys. And we're going to go over it. But this, when I think of this book, this is the story I think about. She said she was stunned. This is something incredible and fantastic. And she asked if she could try it, but the answer was no.
Why is she being allowed to witness this? Does she get into like why?
Oh yeah. Yeah. She's they're buds. They're familiar. She's been going for a long time, got special skills that they utilize from her backgrounds. And now, and kind of like us, she feels that she was synchronistically guided to those interactions just due to everything in her background lining up perfectly to be suitable for her. And even the trials, the hardships, like us, the hardships she went through. She got a great gig. And they taught her how to fly UFOs. They go pick up people from volcanoes that are erupting, which has more questions and answers than that. Birdmen are crazy. She talks about all these variety of different types of entities. AI grays, no big deal. All these things as if they're nothing. Like this. It's just a Tuesday afternoon for her to go walk on the... She's walking around barefoot on this crab, just killing time in between flying lessons. They abduct a dude while she's there. And then take him on board, shrink his ass, and then take him off into another room. And that's how she finds out there's a microverse.
And the answer to that is, oh, there's just places that are smaller. Duh. So he has to be smaller.
But do you see how amazing that right there is, what you said? Because from a perspective, to us, it's to some people, it's kind of crazy that that's even a thing. How could you be small? And even in the movie Downsizing, right, with Matt Damon, whenever they got smaller and they like did this for economic reasons, they lived in a bunker underground, everything was allegedly safe, blah, blah, blah. Has that happened? Are there tiny, wee little people that have figured out how to shrink themselves or were already that small and just kind of living down there? You hear the mole people and all kinds of shit living around.
Yep. The ant people.
The ant people. What is this? Flying saucer for ants?
Maybe.
Okay. Yeah, we've got a little time. Okay, cool. Okay. So next we have Unusual and Obscure UFOs. This is by Marcus Loth. Is a PDF that the boys have. So just pulling from multiple sources here on this stuff. In March 2012, a bizarre UFO encounter occurred in the home of a married couple in Miami, Florida. The incident involved a seemingly miniaturized UFO that could change shape and pass through the walls of their home without any obstruction. This strange and unsettling encounter sparked an intense interest in UFOs and the possibility of extraterrestrial life in the couple, something that they had never even considered before. This is awesome. This is like their invitation, their stick of dynamite, you know, into the bizarre. They're like, look at me. Ignore me. Now, there are very similar cases to the one that eventually was dubbed the home invasion incident on record across the United States. And Loth asks in here, what should we make of such encounters? These are tiny little miniature UFOs, and are they of some type of an extraterrestrial drone or what? And if so, how and why are they entering homes across America? And could this be some kind of alien reconnaissance mission?
Yeah. I mean, privacy is dead if that's true. They can just get in and out of your house in a craft.
Has it ever been real, Joe?
Probably not. Not as much as you think.
Not as much as you think, I would say. Because if you think about all those things that are in astral etheric forms, they see the shit out of you. And if nothing else, they see the mirror image of your etheric body, which is an exact double and copy, which does everything that yours does. Yeah. It's like a CC'd version of your everything you're doing.
Creepy.
Creepy. Furthermore, the fact that seemingly solid crafts can alter their form and pass through solid walls raises questions about the possibility of a paranormal connection. Could part of the answer to the abundance of such UFO encounters be revealed by understanding this potential connection? Drones, little small orbs, objects, and paranormal activity. What do you think?
Yeah.
Because it was mentioned in that 1500s article about the gnomes that were throwing shit at miners. Some of them just considered it coming out of nowhere, like apports just appearing and being thrown at them.
Yeah.
Other people could see the assailant throwing it, said, no, dude, it's a tiny little guy. He looks like, you know, a little gnome. So then are they like in a light spectrum that's just out here and this miner could just see it like invisible ships?
And maybe that's what aports are, is no, they're actually moving. You just can't see them for, but that's the weird part is like what, you can't see that spectrum, but then all of a sudden you can, or maybe it comes back into the spectrum you can see, or, but what are the mechanics behind that? Like
so many questions, right? And then all the entities look weird and different, and some are demonic. And so, you know, again, it kind of paints this interesting idea that there's a big game going on here and most of it's hidden from you. And a lot of it's actually really, really tiny. So it's pretty cool. Now, on March 31st, 2012, in Miami, Florida, an incident involving a metallic orb-like object was investigated by MUFON. And this is case number 40667, if you guys want to look it up, because I know you do. And it was featured on several UFO television shows. This incident is just one of many similar events recorded across America here. That particular morning around 7 a.m., Mary Alvarez was home when she heard her dog barking downstairs. Finding this behavior unusual, she had a dope little chill dog there, she descended to investigate. And upon entering the living room, she was confronted with a bizarre metallic orb-like object, approximately the size of a basketball, hoovering in the air.
Hoovering?
Hoovering.
Okay.
Both of them, unnerved and intrigued, Mary observed the strange craft, noticing flashing multicolored lights on its underside. Remarkably, the object resembled a miniature flying saucer. As she watched the hovering silver orb, her husband joined her and witnessed the particular scene firsthand. And as the couple watched in awe and disbelief, the craft began to change shape before their eyes, transforming from a typical UFO disc that we all think about when we think UFOs into a long, cylinder. And moments later, the craft sped toward the living room wall. And instead of crashing into it, it simply disappeared through the wall, much like a ghostly apparition.
So I was thinking about that the other day when they talk about the cigar-shaped crafts. I'm like, I wonder if they're seeing a saucer from the side.
Side, yes. Like a, yeah, just an odd end or a real low-profile dome top and bottom. I agree with you. But some say, though, that when they turn is why. Because they'll turn sideways and look like a damn circle. Like it looks very,
like a
very
hot dog.
Yes.
From the front,
like a, yeah, like a dong on end. Now, this incident suggests a potential connection between UFO sightings and paranormal activity again. The Alvarez's family experiences did not end there. And after their encounter, Mary Alvarez and her husband became deeply interested in UFOs, extensively researching the subject. This is, again, one of those dynamites. It'll pull you in. They discovered that several other UFO sightings had been reported in the Miami area that same morning. And their curiosity turned into an obsession as they sought to understand their encounter and the broader UFO phenomena. Fucking heard that, girl. This obsession intensified on July 8th, 2012, when the couple experienced a second close UFO encounter over their home. And Mary heard a strange noise outside of their bedroom window and upon looking out saw a massive triangular craft hovering directly above their house. And as she watched, a piercing whistling noise suddenly rang out and the strange craft vanished into thin air. This incident remains unexplained, raising questions about the futuristic crafts, particularly how they can seemingly vanish and pass through solid objects like walls. This is fascinating. While a potential paranormal connection may explain these phenomena, we should also consider advanced technologies, such as super solids, materials that can pass through each other without compromising their integrity. And scientists are only beginning to explore in the 21st century. Have you ever heard of super solids?
No.
I haven't either. I thought this is Marcus Lewis's point on this. Is that it might just be something super, super solid, but also if you think about this, if you've got all that space between the atoms, what if there is something, a solid material that you can make that's off from any other atom? Like it just won't bump into them, and so you could retain solid form and pass through them. It would need to be done probably on this micro scale, right, to then scale it up to that.
Yeah, nanobots.
Yeah, and then could nanobots be adjusted on the fly to then jump out of the way of other atoms as they're there, but still retain their solid form.
In real time, yeah.
In audio, if you move something tiny fractions of a millisecond over, it doubles it, right? It makes it a doubling effect rather than it sounding like two different people talking, right? Like if I take your audio, copy-paste it into two different channels and slightly move it off to the side, it gives a chorus-y effect, it gives a doubling effect.
Reverb, but
if it's barely off, you can't tell. So maybe if it's barely doing anything, but just enough to move out of the way, it doesn't compromise structural integrity from afar.
That sounds pretty futuristic. I still like the reason that UFOs just poof out of existence is because they're time traveling. I still like that idea.
You like that one? I don't rule out scale. I don't rule out any of it, okay? But I don't rule out that they're just shrinking really, really, really fast. Like before your eyes. They just go from the size they are now to a much smaller size, making them perceivably invisible or to disappear.
Yeah.
Either way. But if you're looking at this kind of stuff, which is why we're talking about this, because I'm obsessed with scale. And if you look at these small little tiny stories, they're entire worlds, they're universes with their own laws. And they seem to be able to alter their size, knowing that they're in a, they have the capability to do that and that other realms are at different size. It's fascinating.
It seems like they have it figured out. And I just wish they'd explain it to us. Maybe they've tried. Maybe we just can't wrap our heads around it.
Yeah, and it made me think of the, actually, I was telling Mary about this thread that I'm on here, and I'm just going off on this shit, and she's like, oh, like the Twilight Zone episode, where the lady is freaked out about the little UFO, and it lands on her house and all that stuff. Do you remember that one? There's
no,
nobody says anything throughout the whole episode, but there's, the lady freaks out, and then at the end, she goes on the roof, there's a little UFO there, disc-shaped, what we'd call saucer, like 4 foot across, on a roof. She then sees this tiny little spaceman appear and she like beats the shit out of these things. They come and attack her. Several. She has this whole struggle. It's amazing with these tiny little dudes all over her place. And then at the end of the episode, it zooms out. It reads U.S. Air Force on the side of the saucer.
Interesting.
So it's like our craft traveling to other dimensions, realities, time traveling, maybe to a place where giants were running around this place. Could you imagine that? You get into the time travel UFO for the U.S. Army and they go, all right, guys, we're just going to send you back a couple thousand years. He gets sent back, but now you're encountering a land of giants.
Yeah. So it looks like everything's or they've shrunk, but really everything just was bigger.
And what is it all dependent on? Relativity. It's all relative to where you are now, honestly.
Yeah. So maybe it looks like maybe our Earth as an electron, or, you know, as a cosmic cell, like you were talking about in the mundane story, like maybe we're slowly shrinking because that's what cells do and then die. I don't know.
So many questions with this shit. This is why it's important to take a little look at the small things, you know?
Yes, ladies, it's important.
Now, here's another one. This one's from, again, Marcus Loweth. We have a few here from this work. This is a Farmers Branch incident. This is in Texas. This is right down the road. Another intriguing case occurred over 40 years before the home invasion incident of 2012 that we just talked about in Miami, Florida. Now, on September 30th, 1968, in Farmers Branch, Texas, a witness walking through a wooded area near a creek noticed a strange object. Now, the object was about 100 feet away, and it resembled a football-sized reflective silvery metallic object. The witness, who was carrying a pellet gun to shoot birds only, right, had initially reported the incident, but the witness finally spoke up publicly about it in 2015. Due to his young age and not considering that the object might be a UFO, the witness did what, Joe?
I have no idea.
He raised his gun and he fired at it.
Duh.
His little pellet gun. And this little kid was out there just to hunt. I didn't do, but in 2015, he finally admitted to it. His aim was accurate, and a millisecond later, the sound of a pellet hitting a metallic object rang out. You know, like when you see those little bells on the telephone poles?
Yeah, a little ding.
Ding. Almost immediately, the craft took off. It rose into the air at a 45-degree angle before instantly vanishing at the speed of light. So again, did it take off? Did it go somewhere? Did it time travel? Did it shift into another dimension? Did it get real small, real fast?
And I want to hear the occupant's report of some little thing shooting a gun at him.
Yes.
That sounds like the reverse of the earlier story.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We want to hear his perspective. The thing's sitting in there and he's like, oh man, this thing, it was a giant. And he
barely
hopped out.
A bee sting.
He was ugly. Yeah. Rather, the object disappeared into the sky, breakneck speed, or literally vanished into thin air. As he writes here, as many other orb-like UFO sightings has, remains a debate. So again, the kid couldn't even tell you if it shot off or disappeared or whatever. It was only the weeks and years following the incident that the witness began to truly contemplate what he had seen. And after watching the home invasion incident on a television show, he felt compelled to report his encounter due to the similarities. That's fascinating. So somebody telling their story publicly gives you permission to then reveal your own freaky because you feel like it's not that weird. Folks are out here talking about it. Oh my God, I had a similar incident.
I think that's how this whole thing has been going for decades now, is that the more people that come out and tell these stories, there's still people that are, you know, hesitant to, because it's still weird and they're like, I don't want to be seen as a weirdo. But now there's so many out there that more and more people are coming. Yeah, I've seen it too. And that, of course, brings out fakers and people doing it for clicks and views nowadays, but still look at them.
It's still fun, and it's still asking questions, which is great. Again, these little sticks of dynamite do you feel that we're over that, what do they call that, critical mass, where like too many people are now questioning it, that really the people who have had encounters folks are starting to realize that it's very widespread?
Oh, yeah. Well, especially now that, like we talked about in the last show, now that the UFO files have dropped, it's definitely critical mass. People are talking about it that have never talked about it before, or always thought it was freaky or whatever, but... Yeah, I think we've crossed some kind of a threshold now where things are going to be changing really quickly, I think.
It feels like that, doesn't it? Yeah. Yeah, when your church mom is talking about it at a basketball game, right?
Yeah.
In this report, he speculated that the sighting might be part of a bigger picture of UFO encounters. Now, it's noteworthy that the young witness in Texas fired upon the object. Hell yeah, he did. Now, while this certainly wouldn't be the recommended course of action, it provides us with valuable information. And here's where I'm going to point out that all those kids whose parents told them that playing video games was a waste of time, those kids that are now filling stadiums and making millions of dollars, shoot at UFOs, kids, with pellet guns, all right? For instance, the object he encountered was definitely metallic and solid. So I like this bright glasses half full approach to this, because he's like, well, let's talk about the data that he got because he shot the thing.
Well, it was solid and metallic at the time.
That's what he says. Holy shit. Joe, I'm tempted to share my screen and show you this fucking note because it's solid where I left off to make my goofy comment, comma, at least at the time of the sighting.
Yeah. Because, I mean, does it morph or, like you said, shrink? So it can't just be, or it can't just be a solid metal object if it's doing that.
Well, it's very intuitive of you and also just fucking on point. I'm still mind blown by it. Now, if the craft was similar to the one witnessed in Florida in 2012, it's perhaps metallic form could change shape and morph into something else, exactly like you said.
Wow.
And additionally, there is no apparent effort to attack the witness in response to being fired upon. Instead, the craft took immediate but non-aggressive action by vacating the area. She got the fuck out. So was this a pre-programmed response? And this is a great question Marcus Lewis is asking in this. Or does the craft utilize what we would now call smart technology? Something knows it's being shot at, it reacts and yeets off. The last suggestion raises the possibility that these small little drone, like mini UFOs, could be experimental black budget crafts. You don't say. Utilizing smart technology that even in the late 60s, technology was far beyond the knowledge and understanding of the general public.
Yeah. And that brings, you know, the whole, oh, the government or whoever's controlling things are, you know, so many years ahead of us in technology. I don't even think that can be debated. No. What can be debated is how far ahead. There's some people that think they're 1,000 years ahead of us in technology. I wouldn't go that far. I would say probably somewhere between 50 to 100 years. But even that might be a bit much, depending on how you think of it.
I think it's close. I think it might be somewhere in between your estimate, conservative estimate, I might add, to the 1,000 years. I think it's somewhere in there because I think there is old tech that young retards got a hold of. You know what I mean? Like, given the infinite chainsaw, they got the chainsaw.
Yeah.
And they're figuring out how to, they shouldn't have. And that's, I think, what we're encountering here, which has been a lot of fun, if I'm honest.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do another one here. The mini flying saucer encounter of Carol W. This is one of the most peculiar encounters ever recorded, and it occurred in Gateshead in the United Kingdom in the late summer of 1979. So remember all these?
Another 70s account.
Another 70s. There might be a thread here. This one also, I'm going to say, to something that you talked about earlier, this is a callback. It involved a woman named Carol W., and this first incident happened on an August morning when Carol was lying in bed waiting for her husband to return from his night shift. Get home to me, boo. An intense toothache kept her on edge and alert. Toothache is a weird word to read.
Yeah, it looks like...
It doesn't look like...
Toothache.
Like whore's divorce. It doesn't look like you should say it that way. Now, as she sipped her tea, a sudden red glow emanated from the curtains outside, and she put down her cup and she went to the window. And to her astonishment, a massive disc-shaped object sparkling with multicolored lights hovered silently over the streets below. I was in the 70s. It was for Branson. Keep that in mind. Without warning, the glittering disc shot upwards and vanished, and Carol, seemingly uninterrupted, simply returned to bed as if nothing unusual had happened.
Again, that always happens.
It's odd. This sort of nothing to see here. Ignore me. A few minutes later, a miniature version of the disc appeared in the bedroom through the window. Big craft overhead. She goes and sees it. All shoots up. No big deal. Goes back to bed. Didn't get her attention. Lays down. Now, the same exact thing to scale. Shrunk down. Comes through her window. In her bedroom. It was identical in every way except for its size, being only 1.5 feet in diameter. As it moved, glittering specks trailed behind it like magic dust. And as it approached the bed, Carol heard a loud buzzing sound and a strange sensation that almost numbed her entire body. Buzzing, whistling noises are associated with these things as well. Then, just as suddenly as it appeared, the disc vanished. Carol didn't disclose the incident to anybody. And despite being fully awake, she convinced herself that it was just a bizarre dream, as you do.
We always ask, like, what's the point of that? Like, they apparently, you know, got her attention, and then she went, no, I'm not paying attention. Then it was like, oh, yeah, pay attention to this then. But then it just yeets out. Like, what was the whole point of that? Or is she missing time, and they did do something, and she just got mind wiped?
We don't know about that, but it's a great question to ask. Now, the other question here is if they can do stuff like that, maybe they're just testing their ability to turn people off in front of them in real time. They're just going, all right, test our don't give a shit beam, because this is something you hear. You don't pull out your phone, I don't know why I didn't think about it, but don't pull out my phone. Oh, I don't know why I wasn't scared, but I wouldn't. I don't know why I didn't whatever, but I wouldn't. These unusual human responses to this incredible event.
Or like when two people see it and then they don't talk about it ever.
Yes, that's a weird one. Huge one. Drive home for hours after a missing time event and then never bring it up. Crazy in the car, silent together after this happened, knowing it. They both knew it. Don't talk about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, after me and my wife saw the one we saw over our house, that's all we could talk about. And we actually talked about that phenomenon too, where we're like, isn't that weird how a lot of people see these things and then just don't talk about it? And like, no, that's all we could talk about. We were like, that was crazy.
And maybe this is what they were doing. It's the give a shit ray. They were testing it. They do a huge craft over her, and then they zoom out. And then from a location, maybe there's somebody in the bushes just shooting it at her, going, all right, now, and you don't care. You want to go back to, it's a Jedi beam. Yeah, oh, yeah. This is no big deal. This is not
go
a big deal.
Go back to sleep.
Yeah. Oh, I do want to go back to sleep. And then we're going to shoot it in a room, too, just to really be sure. And then she's like, oh, no big deal, whatever. And then it yeets off. Dude, it's
so bizarre.
2 weeks later, she had another encounter with another miniature craft that she called out to her husband, but by the time he had arrived, the object was gone. And several weeks later, Carol's husband was once again working the night shift. Not wanting to stay home alone, she took her children to spend the evening at her mother's house. Everything seemed normal until she woke up at 4 a.m. unable to move. Now sleep paralysis, right? To her disbelief and terror, the small flying disc hovered in front of her. Not off small flying disc, the small flying disc that she saw, the same exact one.
The same one, the fairy dust one.
Yes, even more terrifying were several 2-foot-tall humanoids also in the room. And despite her intense fear, Carol couldn't comprehend how the creatures this size could fit in such a small craft. Pay attention to that. Despite her fear, Carol couldn't comprehend how creatures of this size could fit in such a small craft. What makes her assume that they came out of that craft? I know it's a craft that's there in front of you, but obviously size tells us that they wouldn't. But she kind of knew that they would, but had trouble wrapping her mind around the information she knew that they came from that thing.
Maybe it didn't shrink. Maybe that's a little drone they shot out from the bigger ship, you know, and that one can move through windows. And then they were coming in to retrieve their little drone.
Now, this is what you and I could come to, hindsight, right? But in the moment, she said she couldn't comprehend how creatures of that size could fit in the craft. She didn't say, they told me, or how could they do that? She said she couldn't comprehend, meaning that she had knowledge of it for some reason. Like, why would she? Yeah. That's what I'm saying is, yes, you and I could say, well, maybe it's just a drone hovering with you that's like taking scannings of the area. Like a Prometheus, they have those little things that launch into the thing and they run around and map the area with the lasers.
Yeah,
little pups. Maybe it's one of those. But I just thought that that was an interesting note, and that's going to come back in a minute. Now, each humanoid wore a white one-piece suit. And they had unreal hair, she said, that Carol compared to doll's hair, like a wig.
Ugh.
Yes, like a little toupee, dude.
So these weren't grays. These were just humanoids with Lego hair.
Yeah, humanoids. They wore all white Lego hair, little hat hair. Now, several humanoids approached the bed, and Carol heard a disturbing clicking sound. Ugh. Suddenly, the creatures and the small disc vanished, and she could move again. So, yeah, I'm thinking missing time on this shit. Maybe they are just blocking out the part of their exit from her memory.
That whole missing time thing seems to account, or you know, nicely puts a bow on a lot of these encounters, even if they don't realize they had missing time. Because, like I said, it seems pointless. They do all this effort to make sure she sees this craft, and then just goes away. Like, it would make more sense that she didn't even realize that they did more. You just lost some time there.
I don't disagree. And I've thought about this a lot, man, because when you think about missing time, what's its main thing? Is it's baffling. It makes you ask more questions. It makes you say, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
And that's maybe its entire point. And for us to want anything further than that, maybe that's wrong of us. I don't know. But I'm like you. I think that it's a stick of dynamite. It turns you in the direction. A lot of people have missing time, too. That's sort of the level of dynamite that they can handle. They need a firecracker, not a full-on fucking experience. They just need missing time.
A bit of an M80.
Yeah, flush down the toilet there.
No, and that's another common thing is that, and I know we've mentioned it, but adults or, you know, young adults even that have these experiences and then it seems to ramp up and then they have more and more experiences.
Yep.
And then on top of that, they go, oh man, I totally forgot when I was 5. I saw the Monkey Men or, you know, whatever. And it's like, how is it just... Is it at a point in their life when they can now handle it more? Because it seems to pause between like the ages of I don't know, mid-teens to 25 to 30, there's like this pause, then it starts up again. But then you're like, did it actually pause? And you just didn't remember the last 15-ish years of experiences? But
Saturn return happens at 28. So it's an interesting that time. So it does seem to skip this in between Saturn sessions. But once you hit that next one, yeah, maybe there's something to that, dude. And also, like you, I'm wondering if they can only remember parts of it. So like you only get a piece of the story. Yes, there's something there. You have missing time. You don't get it yet. But maybe it can be unlocked or retrieved, like you said, when they can handle it, man. Because don't you hear that in these contact cases? People who, Bashar, all that shit, you'll know when you're ready kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, I know something about, I've been told this. Oh, I know something about your destiny I can't tell you yet because it wouldn't be valuable to tell you. I kind of trust in that. Because if you're told you die by a ladder, do you ever get on another ladder or around another ladder again? Is it useful to you?
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, though, too, is why would you show up just to tell me you can't tell me yet? Like, just show up when you can. Like, what's the point of this?
And that's the thing, is it makes you go to it. So it makes you engage in it. So now that it's multi-pronged.
Altering your trajectory in life or something so that you can have that experience later? Or
just be open to something that has to do with you being open to experiences later. Like, it doesn't even need to necessarily have to do with the thing. I truly feel this way, man, that it all has to do with you, not the stuff around you. It's your reaction, your relationship, your engagement, how it responds, the mirror kind of concept. But really, it's about how you either absorb, whatever. What changes your trajectory? And I'm sure there's plenty of things you and I could say changed our trajectory to set us off in directions our parents are finally proud of, but I could say that that's maybe deeper than we know, isn't it? Yeah. But it took us a minute to get there, and a lot of fucking weird, freaky woo-woo redirects. It took us in a lot of lonely courses.
I was going to say, well, I haven't had any ramp up. I mean, we saw that one UFO that I recall, and this has been like four-ish, five-ish years ago, and I don't recall having any experience before that, and there's been none since. So, I mean, like I said, I think the one we saw was definitely some military tech, but just my opinion.
And I think that it was so much more valuable possibly than the surface would allow us to offer, because you have already brought so much value to the show from your experience. Just in the fact that when we talk about UFOs, you think of the standard one, not the one you saw, meaning Either it was psycho-programmed, it's not a genuine UFO, what you saw, and the one that we think of is, and like all of these implications just from your one experience alone.
And again, if anybody out there has seen one similar to what I described, and I don't know if anybody remembers or not, but yes, it was a translucent triangular moving about the speed and size of a plane, but it was definitely a sharp-edged triangle. So if anybody's seen this predator-style cloaking on a UFO, let me know, because I haven't heard too many of those stories. I feel alone out here on this.
And this is the beautiful part, too. People will reach out because they felt alone, too. And now that they hear you talking about it, they're going to reach out.
Joe@mysteriousuniverse.org, and also Brandon.
God, I love you. That's wonderful. These strange incidences with Carol here continued for several weeks, and although her husband and children never saw the crafts, they occasionally heard a strange buzzing sound from her mom's room.
That was the other thing about the one we saw. No buzzing sound, totally silent, and there was no Oz effect. But if you're hearing a buzzing sound from your mom's room, just leave it alone, okay?
Oh, honey, you just missed it.
No, I swear there's a UFO in here.
Okay, yeah. Additionally,
get out of that drawer.
No, additionally, the family dog would become extremely. Would become extremely agitated in the presence of these visitors. Yeah. Mama's having her special time.
Her special UFO time.
She usually works when you're delivering because I can hit mute and just giggle my ass off, and now I gotta fucking talk.
She blamed the breakers being blown on the right. On the UFO too.
She's got a plug-in unit.
How many watts was that thing drawing? Oh, look at this. We have blooper reels now.
This is getting aired. Strangely, after several weeks, the activity abruptly ceased as quickly as it began. The more I read this now, it is a dildo story. Her husband's at work. You're buzzing coming from the room. And then, you know, she just, the thing broke or something. Oh, my God.
Power on the whole street goes out.
Oh, my God. Okay. Okay, we have one more NS for this deal here. Okay, so next we have... Now, the boys sent this book, Alien Contacts and Abductions, The Real Story from the Other Side by Jenny Randles. We read a dildo story. Okay. All right. This one's not funny. Okay.
I think we turned it into a dildo story, but I mean, who knows?
No, we're pattern seeking, man. We're sitting here, we're reading some, and I get to the end of it, I'm like, huh.
Now, wait right. A second. Was this actually on MUFON?
Oh, it was BUFON. That's my bad. Now, in some tests, Carl Higginson was a 41-year-old oil driller when he underwent an interesting alien contact. And on the late evening of October 25th, 1974, come on, he was hunting in the Medicine Bow National Forest near Rawlings, Wyoming, because he was unable to do the job planned for the day because of his unavailability of his coworker. Now, he reached the spot where there were a herd of 5 elk, and there they were. They were in his rifle sights when a very strange series of events unfolded. He fired a bullet, but this floated out of his gun and fell harmlessly to the ground.
Oh, that's some Matrix stuff there.
Yes. He felt the air tingle as if it was an electric storm or something about. Then he was approached by a strange man who was tall, and he was wearing a black one-piece suit with 2 horn-like rods on his head. He had 2 rows of very prominent teeth that dominated the otherwise slit mouth. Now, behind him was a cube-like object that was surprisingly small and into which the 2 of them together could not have fitted. Do you see the way the story is written? He meets a dude in the forest here. Okay, it's weird. He's got tubes. He's got little rods on his head, black, almost like a Men in Black encounter. He's got weird eyes. There's a tension. Electrical storm in the air, 2 rows of teeth, weird, slit-like mouth.
That's just creepy enough. You know what? I just read a story about a giant, maybe it was the Kandahar giant, but I think they mentioned he had 2 rows of teeth, too.
Mm-hmm. Giant, 2 rows of teeth and a 6th thumb, right? An extra finger, 6 fingers?
Yeah. And red hair, of course, yeah. Gingers.
I'd want the extra thumb, not the extra pinky. That'd be useful.
Extra gripping power, yeah.
Absolutely, fuck yeah. Now, behind him again was this cube-like object that was surprisingly small, into which the 2 of them together could not have fitted. Again, why are we assuming that the guy was in there, that he used it to travel, that you were also going to get in that thing with him, and then found it unbelievable? This is the dude. Why would they have assumed that he traveled in the tiny thing? Do you see what I mean?
Just in the moment, brash assumptions, I guess.
But almost like this knowing, sort of like don't pick up your phone. It's like an overwhelming, oh, of course this is what's happening now. But
yeah, maybe that's what, maybe not everybody picks up on it as being telekinesis or something. And they just, oh, yes, of course you fit in there and then you travel. And but they're being fed that information maybe.
And that's true, too. Maybe it's some bullshit. Maybe he's like, yeah, I travel in this thing, so we're going to shrink. And this whole damn thing is elaborate and some big ass story. I'm not rolling that out absolutely all.
And that seems to be how telekinesis works, is that there are telepathy. I said the wrong word, but it seems to be that's how it works. It's not, it doesn't come through word for word. It's just an instant. Now you know all of this stuff.
Right. And that's why in these stories, I found it interesting that their monkey man mind is sitting here grappling with the concept that they instantly know now due to the telepathy.
Right.
That they're sitting here. Homegirl couldn't comprehend how they fit in that thing, but knew that that's how they traveled, was in that thing.
Yeah.
Homeboy couldn't imagine both of them, meaning now he knows he's going to go with this thing and the dude fitting inside that box, which he also just simply knew.
Yeah.
That's bizarre to me. Now, later he got the impression that space-time distortion was somehow involved in this. And yeah, this is the thing, the Tartarus idea, that there's some sort of space-time distortion, right? The entity asked if he was hungry, and then he pointed a conical rod, and he floated a pack of 4 pills into Carl's hands. Do you eat the pills, Joe?
I don't know. Do they taste like Snickers?
That's the question. That's the only thing I need. Now, without questioning why, he swallowed one, and then he lost consciousness.
I imagine. He got Bill Cosby'd.
Yeah. No. He next awoke in a room along with the five elk who had apparently been captured. This is like some David Lynch shit, you know?
I think I might have heard this story before, actually.
Have you? Okay.
Maybe.
Now,
it sounds familiar.
Jenny Randall's. Yeah. Now, the book is linked, guys. I found it. There followed a very confused experience where the man was studied by a thing like a football helmet that was placed on his head, and then he was taken on a flight in the UFO. We don't know what UFO, to what he was told was the alien's world. Now, he was told that we had a distorted view of time and that the trip, which lasted 30 minutes, was really 163 light miles long. Have you heard of light miles?
No.
This is a meaningless statement. A light year is often misinterpreted as a duration. It's actually the distance that light travels in a year, i.e. billions of miles. Why would aliens make such an obvious error?
So that makes me think, going back to the scale thing, that
yes,
when they take off in a
shit.
UFO, they're actually just shrinking, and it looks like you're going through the galaxy, but you're actually just flying past electrons and shit.
Welcome to the reason I am obsessed with this. That vision that you just described hit me 3-4 years ago, and I am obsessed with it since. Obsessed. Scale has been my jam, honestly.
And yeah, and when they look like they disappear, they're not, they're just shrinking, and they're like, oh, this is our home world, and it's one little electron on your dog's ass.
Exactly. It's inside your dog. Like, you're the king of their, and maybe the aliens that are hanging out with you are inside your animals, and they're one of the little creatures that are one of the cells of that thing's little body.
So technically, they have been here forever. They've always been with us.
There we go. There we go. Do you see how, like, crypto-terrestrials, it's just they've always been here. What the real technology is shrinking and growing. I feel that that's honestly the real technology. Think about it. At scale, time is different, okay? Time dilations occur at scale. If you can shrink and raise, you're time traveling automatically. If you're shrinking and raising, you're going to different dimensions. Maybe, just maybe, everything is right here, Joe. Maybe there's no other place to go, like fucking Bill Nye said, the Earth's a closed system, blah, blah, blah.
But there are countless galaxies. They're just real small.
There you are. It's at countless things, but at countless scales. And maybe that's it. And again, below our feet, all kinds of shit, dude.
And that's why alien worlds would look alien, because if you're sitting on top of a little nucleus of something and it looks like a planet, you'd have alien looking plants and little microbes and shit crawling all over the place.
My man.
I love it.
This is what's nuts. And what's funny is you took the, does this have to do with scale, right out of my notes here. Here, I'll just read them verbatim. Does this have to do with scale, the scale that you find yourself on, is what I was going to ask you before you did. And he said he took the pill, which is dumb, which rendered unconscious, but was he shrunk and then put in the little floating cube? And for some reason, the guy assumed that that's how he travels, is because he knew that he was going to get shrunk down and put in that damn thing.
And maybe that explains pocket dimensions, too.
Yes.
You know, like when the craft, oh, how did they fit inside? Like you said, you get in there and it's a whole ass huge spaceship like the Orville or something.
There are several stories in Press and Dennett's work back here, which I'm also going to get to, guys. This is a thread, by the way. So this is a long, big thing that we're on here. This is just a little, tiny little part of it, to stick with the metaphor. There are heaps of those stories of Preston Dennett talking about walking inside of a small 10-foot-wide craft from the outside and it being a gymnasium on the inside.
Yeah.
This kind of shit. Again, obsessed, obsessed. Continuing on here, in response, Higdon says that this must be connected with different interpretations of time and space, but similar astronomical absurdities have appeared in several other cases, which would have to do with scale more than distance, because scale would take care of all of that shit. This whole, like, oh, we were gone for 30 minutes, but you traveled this many million light miles. At what scale?
Yeah.
Again, you could have been shrinking the entire time, and that was the journey, like an elevator. You're going one place down in the same exact geographic location.
Yeah.
Dude, this is mind-boggling. Now, on this other world, he was unable to cope because the lights hurt his eyes. And the mistake was soon realized. So these dinky aliens pick his ass up. Oh, just go scoop this little thing up. Like finding an animal in the woods you aren't suited to your house and bringing it inside with all the bright lights that hurt it. You know, it's like this little Pikachu thing, this little nocturnal deal. Leave it outside. Now, he was advised that they had to stay in the shadows on the Earth during daytime for the same reason. And he wore clothes because our sun was too strong for them. In what sounds like a story suited to the witness, the entity, who was called Asu One, said that he was also a hunter, like Higdon, and that they were visiting Earth to take breeding stock back home for food because they could not sustain it without the Earth's help. Now you think of this. Are you going up real big, grabbing a cow? One of these gnomes that had leather? Are you going up real big, grabbing a cow at full size, shrinking it down and taking it back to slaughter and eat and make tiny little overalls out of?
Cute little vest out of, yeah.
What's that adorable thing? A tiny elephant would be fun to have, right? A tiny giraffe would be fun to have. You allegedly could do all this shit. I don't think it's a good idea, maybe. But it's, maybe. But it's, you can. But it's kind of, that part reminded me of that Predator movie where they gather all the hunters and they airdrop them into the planet. And they all go hunt each other.
Oh, yeah.
And are hunted by the Predator. Remember that? They were all hunters of a degree or killers of a degree. And then, so the Predators picked up Predators. And I liked that idea.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, in a very similar line to another case, the witness was told that he did not know how lucky he was. That the Earth was one of the rarest treasures of the universe, being so full of a myriad of life forms, which few other places could naturally sustain. And if you could surf scales, I bet you would have that perspective. After this problem with the light, Higdon was taken straight back to Earth and deposited some way away from where he had started. His truck was moved, quotes, by the aliens into a muddy ditch for his troubles. And so he had to radio for help to get out of the forest. It took a long time for a rescue team, including the sheriff, to find him. And he was still dazed with watery eyes when they arrived from that pill, dude. He was taken into a local hospital for tests and released after 2 days, recovering without the need for medication. Carl Higgins claims that he had been told that they had taken other humans before and were taking them in for tests. But in his case, these had just shown to be no good. They had shown him to be no good for their purposes. Now, he was left with the definite impression that at 41, he was rather older than they wanted, and he wondered if the fact that he had a vasectomy was in any way relevant.
Because they couldn't get his baby batter. Mm-hmm.
That's a whole show. There's heaps of shows about dudes getting chucked out of UFOs pissed off. They'll put girls to work on him. They'll milk the guy and then find out that he doesn't have anything swimming around in there. And so he just gets off by this huge-titted, weird-faced chick, and then he's booted out without his clothes on top of a truck in the cold. And they drop his clothes off on a roof somewhere else. It's fucking funny.
You're useless to us.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here. But how did you not know that before? Like, if you're that advanced, you can't scan over me and know that I'm ringing at a different resonance down there.
Or just check his medical records.
Thank you. Yeah, what kind of government program are we working with here? This is, well, that would make sense, honestly, if it was a government program, to be that inept. That's part one, guys. We're going to go over more many mysteries on the Tuesday show. You guys definitely tune in. Please tell us what is going on in the extension here.
Oh, yes. I believe I'm going to go with the human stupidity.
Yeah.
And it might actually dovetail better than you'd think because, I mean, look at what we're talking about.
I feel a very aligned presentation coming up. So definitely check that in the links below, guys.
But yeah, if you're interested in that kind of stuff, definitely stay tuned for Plus. And we're going to be digging more into Colin Wilson's massive, girthy book that I love. And I might just start doing the, like you do with the Bible, you know, you just kind of open it to a page and start reading and being like, maybe this is what I'm doing. So we'll find out, though, coming up next.
I would read the pages I was rolling out of the Bible. Thank you guys so much for hanging out. Definitely check the links down in the show description so that you can be a part of Plus. We have an incredibly cool big and small thread going on here. And continue it with us in the extension there. Definitely, again, sign up in the links below. Joe, thank you so much. Thank you again to all the Plus members who have signed up. We're getting heaps of folks signing up, man. We're grateful for you guys. Thank y'all. We're getting on the bandwagon of this awesome shit. We totally get it. And for more UFO-confused dildo stories about your mom, check the links below. For everybody else, we'll see you next week. Okay, bye!
And welcome back to your Plus extension. Thanks for being here, everybody on Plus.